how many symptoms you ran as a child that you don't have anymore. And the reason why you don't have it anymore is because you have more psyche awareness as you grow up. You have more emotional vocabulary. I can think of so many things I had that were chronic as a child.
Welcome to Our Power is Within podcast. I'm your host, Chasmith, and my mission for this podcast is to inspire you to take your power back and to realize that you are the healer that you have been looking for all along. I believe that we are all capable of healing in mind, in body, and in soul. Today's episode is sponsored by Primal Trust Academy and Community, which is created by Dr. Kathleen King, a dear friend of mine. Primal Trust is a membership site that helps you to find freedom from chronic illness and trauma, and it is quickly growing as one of the largest worldwide online healing communities. How cool is that? The membership includes so many wonderful things. You have access to Regulate, which is the level one comprehensive program, which self-regulates the brain and nervous system, focusing on both a top-down and a bottom-up approach. There is level two mentorship, where we go deeper into the inner work of attachment and trauma healing. In addition to the level one through three programs, there is access to ongoing study groups, daily forum support, daily live classes, and so much more. Click the link in the show notes today and use the code OPIW to save 5%. Now, our guest today is Natasha Nazarelli. Natasha was introduced to GNM, or German New Medicine, also known as GHK, from a young age of, I think, 10 or 11 years old, through her mom. And she was actually raised with this knowledge always in mind. So whenever she had symptoms show up in her life, her mom would encourage her to look deeper into what she was going through in her life at the time. She has now spent well over a decade immersed in this type of biological body wisdom, which has greatly influenced how she handles and approaches symptoms showing up in her body to foster deep healing. And today I get to pick her brain about all things GNM, GHK related, and healing. If you aren't familiar with what GNM or GHK, otherwise heard as German New Medicine, is, I do have plenty of previous episodes where we dive deep into the theory of GNM and the five biological laws that you can refer back to, because today, while she does give us a very brief explanation, we really use our time together to go much deeper and not just focus on an explanation, if that makes sense. So I will make mention in the show notes of some of the other episodes that you could reference if you are interested. Please enjoy this episode.
Natasha, thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm excited to have this conversation with you. For everyone who's listening, we've already been talking offline before we even hit record, and I've already been learning so much from Natasha. So I'm just really excited to get to have this conversation that I have with her and then share it with everybody who will be tuned in.
I kind of like to unpack and dismantle some things. So before we started, we were going through some programs and seeing how they correlate to you and your personal emotional conflicts, because at the end of the day, it's all individual and everything is a case by case basis. So we have to dismantle and work through it with someone. And that takes time for some, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially if it's been maybe something that you've been dealing with for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
For everybody who is listening, I was thinking what we could do. I do have quite a few episodes on GNM. And so for those of you tuned in, if you're like, what is GNM? What is German New Medicine? I am not going to have Natasha spend a ton of time explaining it from like a theoretical perspective. I will direct you in the show notes to different episodes where we deep dive into that and provide some resources. But for now, I'm going to have you just explain, like, say succinctly what GNM is and the five biological laws.
Absolutely. So German New Medicine is actually, in the German language, we call it Germanische Heilkunde. And I'm actually half German. I speak German as well. So I know, which is Germanic healing knowledge. And it was discovered by Dr. Reichgerd Hammer. Yeah. And what he found was that there must be a way to create a science and a body of knowledge on the biology of the human that takes into account how our emotional conflicts and experiences correlate to things that we experience in the body. So what he found is that the psyche, the brain, and the organ work in absolute synchronicity, and that the emotional conflicts we experience in life register at the brain level, and they create an adaptation at the organ level that helps us to overcome the experience. So throughout that process of his studies, he discovered what he named the five biological laws of nature. And everything that we work through in GNM or GHK, as many people call it, is all about understanding our biology from this place of synchronization. So when we look at a symptom of the body, we don't just merely look at something like the skin. We'll look at, okay, the skin is the epidermis, and the epidermis is controlled by the cerebral cortex. And the germ layer of the skin is ectodermal tissue. Yeah. And then we look at how the cells function. And we also look at our nervous system, our sympathetic nervous system, and our parasympathetic nervous system. And then we look at the emotional root, which for the skin would be a conflict of separation, and whether or not we're in conflict activity, which is we're still in the conflict, we haven't resolved it, or whether we're in the repair phase. So we look at all these layers. So a lot of people have the sort of basic knowledge and they think, oh, GNM is, oh, you know, I have something with my skin and it's a separation. It's like, no. It goes way deeper than that. It goes into, okay, where does the skin lie in the brain? How are the cells in the skin operating? Have you gone into resolution? So that means, have you resolved the conflict and then had a symptom? Because often the symptoms that we experience in the body are already the repair phase. So they come at the time where we've already resolved the emotional conflict, and then we have a symptom at the organ level as the final step to completely upgrade the body. So every time we go through a symptom, we should ideally and optimally go through that experience, work through the conflict at the psychological level, repair the tissues at the organ level, and then come out of it better than before. So there's a misunderstanding in the community that I've noticed where we're treating German New Medicine as a modality. German New Medicine is not a modality, okay? German New Medicine is biology, and it's very biological. So when you study this work, at first it can actually feel quite overwhelming, and maybe you were there, so maybe you know this because you're like, oh my God, I have this sympathetic nervous system, parasympathetic nervous system. I have different brain areas, different brain relays, different tissues, okay? So it can be overwhelming, yes, but I think it's our duty and obligation to do the work to understand how these human bodies work, because this is all we have on this earth. We come to this earth in this body and we will leave it behind. And the best thing we can do is to become in alignment with it and to understand not only the biology of how our own body works, but the biology of nature, because that was the five biological laws of nature as discovered by Dr. Hummer, okay? So it was not an invention. It was not a creation. It was a discovery where he used brain scans and he used patients to be able to succinctly create a body of work that showed and demonstrated that everything we experience at the psychological level has an emotional impact in the brain and can create physical manifestations and symptoms. So that's a quick, easy breakdown. And I think it's amazing that you've already interviewed some other experts. And I really encourage people to listen to those and listen to the breakdown of law by law by law, because it will help you to understand biology. So not a modality, but your true biology.
Yeah, I like that you prefaced that, because I have had people reach out to me and say, oh, what is this GNM? I'm debating if I should do a brain retraining program or do GNM. And I'm like, no. GNM isn't something you do. It's just a way of understanding. And then you can access all these different tools and modalities to try to find resolution for yourself. But the actual idea of GNM is an understanding, it's a knowledge.
Right. And counterintuitively, because even in the conscious community that we are sort of a part of, there's an understanding of, oh, I have a symptom, so therefore there's something I haven't worked through. No. So in also German New Medicine, depending on which organ we're looking at and which tissue we're looking at, a lot of symptoms we experience in the body are already the repair phase. Why is that? Okay, I'll tell you why that is. Because in nature, we are primal beings. So if I'm a gazelle in the wild and the lion comes, that's a threat. I can't produce a symptom because it would prevent me from dealing with the threat. When I have an immediate threat, I go into the sympathetic nervous system and all the resources and energy in my body are being used to allow me to deal with the threat that is currently present. So therefore, I can't get sick. That's not the time when my body can get sick, all right? Now, when the threat is gone and I'm okay, now I go into repair phase, depending on how I experienced that threat, depending on how my psyche interpreted that threat. Now I go into repair phase. So some organs and tissues are going through the symptom at the conflict activity phase. So when I'm currently in the conflict, the organ is adapting, and some go into the adaptation. So that means I experience this symptom in the repair phase. So it's both. But counterintuitively, for example, something like, you know, a flu or a cold that we experience, that happens in repair phase, right? So we work Monday to Friday, we're stressed, and then the weekend comes and we get sick. Why? Well, we couldn't afford to get sick Monday to Friday because we're in our sympathetic nervous system. We have to deal with the tasks at hand. Same thing, right? We notice right when Christmas comes, what happens when the kids come home from school? They get sick. Why? Because they go into repair phase. So it's sort of counterintuitive. Sometimes when I go into repair phase, it's just my body giving me the message, congratulations, we had a stressful event, we worked through it, we're in resolution, and our body is doing the rest of the work to help return me to my harmonious state.
Yeah. When you're speaking of all this, we're kind of talking of more acute symptoms, like a cold comes, you have these symptoms for a few days, they linger, they go away. But what is the difference when we're looking at chronic symptoms or reoccurring, whether it's chronic constant 24/7 symptoms or chronically reoccurring symptoms?
All right. This is kind of where we go into what we call the two-phase program, which is our second biological law. So that's where I was talking about the sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic nervous system. So what happens is when we're in conflict activity, we're in our sympathetic nervous system. So a conflict shock is anything highly dramatic, unexpected, totally threw us off guard, and it is acute, right? We're registering this emotional conflict that we're experiencing. And now when we resolve it, we go into repair phase. But here's the thing. As above, so below. As within, so without. What goes up must come down. So therefore, it's a state of equilibrium. The intensity of the conflict shock is in direct accordance with the intensity of the repair phase. So if I interpreted something in my psyche to be extremely dramatic, shocking for me, the equivalent of my repair phase will be in balance. That's why you want to be super aware of your nervous system, because you do not want to run your body on empty. You do not want to drive your car on low fuel, okay? It's like you do not want to stay in conflict activity too long, because the intensity of the repair phase can then in turn be quite intense. So what we want to do is we want to downgrade. We want to live in alignment with the awareness of our nervous system and our triggers. So when we have something that's chronic, it means that we are still being triggered by the same theme, right? So we talked a little bit about the skin. So when we have a chronic skin condition, that means we have the chronic re-triggering of that separation. And with the skin, the epidermis, the cells ulcerate during conflict activity. So we don't really notice that symptom there during conflict activity. But when we go into repair phase, now the cells proliferate to restore the ulceration that occurred during conflict activity, right? What goes out must come down. As within, so without. As above, so below. So if the cells ulcerated in my conflict activity, that tissue now needs to be repaired and restored through cellular proliferation. So then in the repair phase, our skin gets itchy, it repairs, right? And we have a symptom. So when we have something that is chronic, we're re-triggered on the same theme. So likewise, when I'm looking at the skin, I'm re-triggered in that separation over and over and over again. Maybe for a child, that separation could have to do with their family environment, feeling separated. I've worked with melanoma conditions that had to do with an unwanted touch. Yeah. So they want to separate for that. They felt defiled. All right. They had an attack. They had something they interpreted as an attack. So they're working through the adaptation on that layer. And every time they get re-triggered into feeling that awful defilement attack again, they have the symptom and the body goes back right from the start, back into conflict activity, back into repair. And we get re-triggered, all right? So understanding the biology helps us to understand what our triggers are. So when you have a symptom, what happened just before? What did you just resolve? What did you just go through emotionally? And we need to do the work to unpack that.
And so also what can happen is we can have things become things, whether it's like food or a place or other experiences become like tracks or triggers also, right? That are associated, or the brain associates with a specific conflict.
Correct.
So
correct.
A food I eat suddenly reminds my brain or makes my brain go into this separation conflict activity.
Absolutely. So for me, I'll use a personal experience in my life. I never learned German New Medicine. My mother studied it 15 years ago with many different teachers, doctors, and practitioners. And she has been continuing to study, practice, and teach for many, many, many years. So for me, my learning of German New Medicine was through my experience because I was being taught this in my home. So every time I experienced a symptom, my mom would ask me, let's unpack that. What did you just go through? And of course, she knew because I'm living under her roof. So she's observing me. She's observing what's going on in my daily life. So she's very aware of what I'm experiencing at the psychological and emotional level. And then when I'm presenting a symptom, she's asking me the right questions to be able to form the connection in my own mind. So I learned that way, you know, when I had a stomach pain, that's the indigestible morsel. That's what can I not stomach, you know? So my mom would ask me questions like that. Natasha, what can you not stomach? What was too much for you? What could you not take in? What could you not accept? If it's very intense, who could you not forgive, right? Because I can't stomach this because I cannot forgive this person for what they did to me, right? We have to look at it that way. So in my experience, I grew up in a household where that was my understanding of health. So anytime I had a symptom, my mother would say to me, congratulations, how great your body is giving you this message. How can we sit together now and work through this? So I never lived in fear. Interestingly enough, though, I actually grew up lactose intolerant before my mom found this wisdom. So I was going to school with rice milk, drinking soy milk and almond milk before that was a thing. You know, like now in today's society, we go to the cafe and the barista is like, what? You want whole milk, right? But back then, this was years and years ago, when I was growing up in school, I was the weird kid that couldn't have, you know, the cheese, or I couldn't eat the chocolate. I had rice chocolate. When my mom found this wisdom, I remember she sat me down at the table and she poured me a glass of milk and she put it down on the table and she said to me, Natasha, I want you to think back if there's anything that you could remember that happened to you with milk. Of course, my first instinct is no, nothing happened. I didn't have anything. Yeah, that's always, by the way, our subconscious's first instinct. No, I didn't have anything. So, okay, if you could remember, if you could close your eyes and you could go back to a moment, maybe a moment where we were sitting together as a family at the dinner table, was there any kind of tension you can remember? And I did remember something. I remembered that when I was a very little girl, I was pouring a big jug of milk for myself. And my father had just come home from a long day at work. And my mom had just made a beautiful meal. And I thought I was strong enough to do it myself. And I took the big liter jug and I'm pouring myself this glass of milk and I drop it. And it goes all over the table. It ruins the meal. And I remember my father freaked out. And now he's yelling at my mother, and now he's yelling at me, and now my mother's yelling at my father for yelling at her, for yelling at me, yeah? And it's chaos in the family environment. Why? All because I was pouring myself the glass of milk. So psychologically, remember, we're primal beings. So what did my body interpret as the threat? The milk, yes, because if I hadn't poured myself a glass of milk, I wouldn't have had that. So that day, after I poured myself the glass of milk, what did I get? An indigestible morsel. I couldn't stomach the fight between my parents. And did I think it was my dad's fault for yelling? No, I was a child. So I thought it was my own fault. It's all my fault that my parents are fighting. Remember, children, psychologically, they don't have the emotional vocabulary yet. So when their parents are fighting, whose fault do they think it is? Their own, all right? So I interpreted that as my own fault. But now, tomorrow, when I go drink my glass of milk, I get a stomach ache. And then what do I think? Oh, it must be the milk, yeah? And then I remember my mom sent me to a naturopath at that time because she thought, oh, I'm doing holistic work. I'm going to send her to the naturopath. Why is she having these stomach issues? And what does the naturopath say? oh, you're lactose intolerant. You can't have dairy. You know, dairy is bad for you because of the bacteria and the hormones and the this and the that. So now, not only do I have the first emotional conflict that perceived the threat, but now I'm on a track because now I'm told by this naturopath in the white coat, oh, no, 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 you can't have dairy. Dairy is bad for you. So now what am I? Now I'm an 8-year-old child. And every time I see the chocolate, I go, oh, no, no, dairy is bad for me. I can't have dairy. So what is my psyche doing? My psyche is creating a track where I perceive the milk to be a threat to myself. Oh, no, I can't have milk because it's bad for me and I'll get a stomach ache. So what do the cells in the stomach do? They actually create an adaptation for me. They're like, oh, we can't process this. So the cells will ulcerate and then restore again. What's the biological function of that? It's actually to help me better digest what I cannot intake. Yeah. So in that original fight, I couldn't intake what was happening in the chaos between my parents. So the cells were ulcerating. I was going through cell loss, cell proliferation. Yeah. So I could better digest. So finally, when the fight was over, I had the repair phase. So that's where I get the stomach ache and maybe a very uncomfortable trip to the bathroom, right? So these are things we want to understand so that we don't perceive external things to be a threat. And that's another problem that we have done in the holistic environment. Oh no, I can't eat that thing because it's bad. Or no, it's all about my diet. It's all about this. And I warn people with that because the more psychological tracks you create with your food, the more your psyche is perceiving something as a threat. And you don't want to be in a state where you're perceiving food as a threat because food should nourish you. Food should be something that we enjoy. Yeah. So something to be aware of. If we're all sitting at the dinner table together and we all eat the same meal, and I get sick the next day, was it the meal? No, it wasn't the meal because we all ate the same thing, right? If we all ate the same thing, it's just me with the reaction. Was it the meal or was it me? So this is where we have to look at things. And if we're really in an optimal condition, mind, body, spirit, you should be able to eat whatever you want. That should be the pivotal state of health is I can eat a McDonald's burger if I want to and be okay. Of course, I choose not to for other reasons, but if I wanted to, my body should be so optimal that it could handle that. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
But of course, with my knowledge and wisdom, I wouldn't eat the burger. And that's a whole other thing. But if I'm looking at optimal health and that's what I'm striving for, optimal health should not be through elimination. I have to take this out of my diet and this out of my diet and this out of my diet and this out of my diet. Optimal health should be, I understand my body through the synchronicity of the psyche, the brain, and the organ. And therefore, I am able to handle whatever comes my way in my body. And then everything else becomes the cherry on top of the cake. Yeah. So everything else, whatever you do that you love, maybe it's your meditation, maybe it is your diet, maybe it's your workout practice. Everything else is just helping you in that support system. But who runs your body? Your brain. And who runs the brain? What's the entity sending the messages to the brain? Your psyche, right? So we have the spirit, the psyche, the brain, and then the organ. And they all work together. We are a package deal, right?
Yeah. Okay. So I know because I've listened to you on another podcast that you resolved this conflict, or not the conflict, the allergy to the milk. I know you resolved it. Now, myself included, and there's probably going to be people who are listening that say, but what it, like, you figured out the original conflict. You ended up getting to that memory of spilling the milk. But some of us, I mean, for you, it was so good. Your mom knew this stuff when you were so young. So she really got to help kind of condition you to have experiences with and go into investigation mode and curiosity from a young age to really minimize creating these really long standing conflict reactivations with tracks and triggers. And some of us are in our 30s and 40s or even 50s and 60s, and we may be running at these on-off programs since childhood, and we just aren't able to recollect the original source of memory. Like, we just can't get there. How do we still find empowerment to heal in those situations?
Okay, great. I love that question. So first off, we're looking at what is the symptom, right? So let's go back to the one I was referring to. My symptom was indigestion, yeah? So then I looked at, okay, what is the organ impacted and what is the emotional conflict? Okay, so I know if my symptom is I'm getting indigestion, then I look up, okay, what does GNM say is the emotional conflict surrounding that? And then I see, oh, it's an indigestible morsel. So that means it's something that is hard for me to stomach, something I don't want to take in. All right. Okay. So now I know the theme of it. Yeah. So now I look at, first off, eliminating the association. So I'm like, okay, I don't need to live in fear of something external. It's not the food. I'm taking radical responsibility. I'm understanding my psyche is running the show, and I'm not going to blame anything outside of myself any longer. And you'd be surprised. That is hard for most people to get to. That in and of itself can be the first hump that you have to overcome. You're not going to point the finger anymore. Yeah. That I'm going to go internal. I'm going to go within myself. And I'm going to take responsibility, and I'm going to come to the alignment with the understanding that if my psyche created this adaptation, my psyche can also create my solution. So that's the first one. Yeah. So first, I take radical responsibility that I'm going to do the work here. Yeah. Now I look at the symptom. All right. What is it that I cannot stomach and accept? So the symptom theme will help point you in the direction of what it is you're working with. All right. So it's okay if you can't remember what happened to you as a child. All right. Because when we have something chronic, it means the theme is still present with us today. So you can start to unpack what currently today is something that you cannot stomach. And when do you get triggered on that theme, right? So maybe it's, oh, you know, I can remember when I was around my family dinner table and I didn't want to be there and I couldn't stomach the dysfunction that was in my family environment. Okay, that's a good start. All right. Now what else can't you stomach today? Oh, I can't stomach the environment in my workplace. Okay. Oh, I can't stomach the dynamic in my relationship. All right. So we're unpacking all of that. And it's like peeling off the layers of the onion. When you start to unravel that, you'd be surprised what the subconscious starts to unveil to you. Because a lot of the times these themes stem from conflicts, belief systems, traumas that we went through in our childhood. So it's all right if we can't remember, because the organ is still adapting today. So that means that the adaptation is still serving a function today. So we need to do the work to tell our psyche, I'm not that child anymore. I don't need this adaptation anymore because I'm going to face it. All right. I always say, don't fake it till you make it. Face it until you make it. Face the triggers that are coming up for you, right? So if we were looking at the skin, I'd be facing my separation. What is the first point of contact I have with my skin? It's always my mother. I could look at, did I experience the embrace, the touch, the physical contact that I needed in my family environment? These are all things that we can use to unpack. So we always look at, what's the organ being impacted first? What is the emotional conflict behind that organ? What are the themes in that emotional conflict that I'm currently experiencing in my life? And what can I do to deal with and minimize those conflict themes in my life right now?
Okay. I have two questions, follow up.
Yeah.
So you're saying, and I know, we know that like, it's not the food, no matter what, even if it is the food, it's not the food. However, if it's not the food, but it is the food, like in this instance, like you're, well, let's just say your milk instance, you were very really having an experience of upset stomach every time you drank milk. So if you were to continue to drink milk, but you weren't feeling in like anything in your life was indigestible, would the milk automatically just have to stop bothering you? Or no, could the milk still bother you because it's already become a track?
Correct. Good question on the clarification. So when we're specifically looking at something like a food allergy, yeah, then, so yes, I deal with the emotional side, but I also need to deal with the fact that I am already perceiving milk as a threat. So even if I don't remember, let's say I don't remember, I could just have the milk in front of me and say, you know what? I'm taking radical responsibility here. I'm understanding that my psyche and my brain are in total control, and I'm a sovereign human being, and I am running the show here. And I'm going to talk to myself. This is actually one of the tasks my mom made me do. She said, talk to your psyche now. Let's sit in front of the glass of milk and say to ourselves, I'm safe. I don't need to perceive milk as a threat anymore. I had an experience with something I couldn't digest, but I'm understanding that I am in complete control, that I don't need to perceive the milk as any kind of threat, that I can nourish my body with the food that I eat, that I can maintain a harmonious environment, and that I can drink this beautifully and gracefully and enjoy it and allow it to give my body the energy that it needs to fuel me. Yeah. So I can create this. Yeah. So I'll give you another example. I had a friend of mine who was gluten intolerant, celiac, and could never have gluten. So I know this work. And this friend happened to be quite into spirituality. So I'm working with that. Okay, I know psychologically she's quite into spirituality. She believes in transcendental meditation, etc., what have you not. So I put the loaf of bread in and I said, oh, you know, I've been working with a shaman, and I just really got into transmutation, how we can use consciousness to transmute our physical reality. So I think if I just use this prayer and I transmute the gluten in the bread, you'll be able to eat it just fine. Are you into that? She said, yeah, okay, I'm into that. So I put the loaf of bread on the table. I start to close my eyes. I start to sing. I start to pray. I start to do little hand gestures over the bread, what have you not. And I'm making a big show for her that, oh, we're releasing everything in the bread. Yeah. And for her, this is in resonance with her psyche because she's spiritually inclined. So now I slice the bread. I give it to her and I say, let me know tomorrow how you feel. So tomorrow she calls me up on the phone and she said, oh, I think you need to transmute the bread every time because I didn't have anything. Why didn't she have anything? Because she didn't perceive the bread as a threat. Because psychologically, she's very spiritually inclined. She believes in the sort of ritual that I did, and she didn't perceive it as a threatening trigger for her. She wasn't triggered anymore. She was eating the bread harmoniously. So I kept this up.
And this situation also, she didn't resolve whatever the conflict originally was.
No, she didn't resolve whatever the conflict originally was.
But what happens if somebody is like, okay, I've done the research, like I've gotten the education, I believe this stuff, and I know food's not the trigger. So like, they're so clear, like I know food's not the trigger, but then their body is still, or their brain, I should say, is still having a reaction to the food, even though they do feel firm in their belief system that it's not a problem.
Right. So case by case basis. So for her, that was enough for me to do that. And then later I did tell her, just so you know, I'm not doing anything. I just wanted to show you that it's not the gluten, it's you, and that you have the power. And that's also, by the way, why in traditional cultures, you pray over your food, you bless your food, and you eat in silence. Yeah. If we kept that up, we'd have a lot less food allergies on the planet right now. But we don't keep that up. We eat in front of the TV. We eat with our families where there's conflict. And why is it always gluten, dairy? Well, because it's very common in our diet. So chances are, you know, it's been in our system when we experienced something that was a conflict shock for us. So that's why, first of all. All right. So let's say that wasn't enough. Just that awareness wasn't enough. I find oftentimes it is enough to just have the awareness, and that often does it. I've even seen people have that awareness and pick up a cat the next day when they were very allergic to cats. Yeah. All right. So if you can't, then you need to do the emotional work to recall and go backwards. And that's when you work with certain themes. And it's nice to work with a practitioner who can guide you to help facilitate you to be able to ask you the right questions. But you don't need that. You can start to become a detective and examine, all right, why is it the bread? Could I consider, was there anyone in my family who made a lot of bread? What can I remember? Where did I break bread with someone? So we can start to unpack that. Also, you can start to implement practical tools. Yeah. Can I create a harmonious environment when I'm eating? So that means maybe for me, I do bless my food. Maybe it is sit in silence when I eat. Maybe I do cut out restaurants for a while because that's really triggering for me because I believe that they're putting the seed oils in the food and that they're poisoning me and the seed oils are going to give me cancer. For a lot of people, that's the case. So first work on, you know, some practical solutions and then get into the transcendent solutions. What do I need to do emotionally, psychologically for myself to unpack this? And I want to say with the transcendental solutions, it needs to be in resonance with the psyche of the individual. And this is why so many people say, oh, German New Medicine doesn't work. German New Medicine doesn't work. German New Medicine isn't the modality here. German New Medicine is the language of adaptation of the body. Now you need to do the work to find what's in resonance for you. So if I say to you, oh, you know, just write down on a piece of paper, I'm safe, I'm safe, I'm safe. Okay. If that doesn't resonate with you, that's not going to work for you because you're going to be like, oh, this is BS. You know, I don't align with that at all. All right. So it's like, I need to enter your mind when I work with someone and I need to figure out what's in resonance with you. And the first thing I always do is create the conscious awareness. So I establish the foundation. How do I do that? I have to first dismantle all the systems that are in place. So all the belief systems that we created, and we do that because we've lived in this medical system, this pharmaceutical system, but really what it is it's an external system. We've been living the shame and the blame game where we're blaming everything outside of ourself. You know, it's the food, it's the toxins, it's the environment. Yeah, it's my genetics. All right. So we've been pointing the finger. So the first thing I have to do is I have to empower somebody with this knowledge and I have to bring this knowledge into their awareness so they can start to stop playing that game. All right. So I have to dismantle the system. It's like body is the temple. And I have to take that old raggedy old church of the matrix and I have to tear it down to the shreds till we reach the earth, till we go back to the natural earth environment. And then I have to build the new foundation. So then I need to educate them on a new paradigm of wisdom, which is the wisdom of the true nature of their body. And then from there, oftentimes what I find, that's enough sometimes. That's enough for someone to just go, oh, whoa, I see it now. I'm totally aware. And I'm re-changing my lifestyle to now live in harmony with nature and in harmony with my body. And when I have a symptom, I'm not afraid. I'm understanding the message that the symptom is sending me and the gift of the symptom. And for a lot of people, that's enough. Now, for some, they're dealing with something quite intense with them, and that there's a lot of subconscious belief systems within that that still needs some unpacking. Yeah, still needs the inner work to dismantle. So now what I do is first I rip that old house to shreds. I build the new wisdom of foundation. We're building it together, by the way. It's a co-creative process when we do this work. And now I'm putting new things in place. But those things have to be in resonance with where you're at, all right? So this co-creative process, I need to see where you're at. So what are the things that you have currently in your life? What are the tools in your toolbox that are working with you? And how can you use those things that are already in resonance with you to now add them on to the symptom that you're currently experiencing? You know, for me personally, I like to work a lot with sound. Why? Because we're always in resonance with the sound. Even when we're in talk therapy, what are we doing? We're naming the emotions that we've been suppressing. And if the symptom's still there, that means the emotional suppression is still happening, means we haven't dealt with it yet. So what's the first thing we're doing in talk therapy? We're naming it. We're expressing it. And the purest resonance is our voice. So I work a lot with sound. And sometimes when it's really in alignment with someone, I'll even sing with them, sit in a circle and let's sing our grief, right? If we're having the separation conflict, let's sing in community and come back together. You know, I read a lot about ancient cultures and the methods that they used. And in shamanic practices, they used to talk about a disentanglement process, where when somebody was experiencing, you know, a physical symptom, they would lie them on the floor with nature and they would ask to be disentangled from whatever it was that was still causing them distress. So they would say, okay, I asked to be disentangled from this really disharmonious relationship with my partner. Maybe it's that. Maybe that's what you need. All right. But we have to get creative because our body is like a super genius. So we have to become the super genius with our body and get really creative on what it is we need to do. And when we've been running something for a really long time, it means that that theme has disempowered us for a really long time. And that karmic event keeps coming up in our life. And now we need to do the work to empower ourselves again, to break it down. Is that making sense?
It does. I want to go into like a really practical example. And you and I were talking a little bit about this offline. So I kind of want to take this approach.
All right.
I want to focus on a separation conflict. And assuming that you're working with somebody and they're dealing with something skin related, something that says, hey, this is some type of separation conflict. And let's say that you, for whatever reason, they have some block and they're just not there yet where they're aware of what is the separation conflict from. I don't know what I'm wanting to be separated from, or I don't know what I'm separated from, whom of which I long to be connected with. Say they're just not there. Are there still practical solutions or ways that we can begin to downgrade this separation conflict without knowing the actual root through like any way of just like downgrading at a deeper psyche level, the feeling of being separated from or wanting to be separated from?
Okay. Well, first of all, let's go there because I heard you say many times, I don't know. I don't know. All right. Uh-huh. So when I hear you say, I don't know, that gives me a big clue that you're not actually living in alignment because you do know.
Mm.
Do you see how that statement already first, you just took the power away from yourself by saying, I don't know.
Right.
Because is that biologically true that you don't know?
Well, no, it's not. At some conscious level, we might not know, but biologically, we obviously do know.
Right. But do you see you make the mistake there first? Okay. So if I know this work, I have to do the work. So as soon as somebody tells me, I don't know, I correct them right there. Hold up. In your body, you carry the information and the wisdom, and this isn't woo-woo stuff, this is biological genetic science of your ancestors that go back millions and millions of years. And your ancestors survived and thrived on this planet, and they had all kinds of programs and adaptations, and all of that information is within you. All the information of everything you have ever experienced in your life is within you. Could you agree with that?
I think so, based on the research and understanding I've done.
Yeah. Okay, good. Right there.
And just doesn't mean I know how to access it all the time.
All right. Okay. That's okay. That's okay. But do you see how we're already starting to build a bridge where we're starting with a new foundation? Mm-hmm. Where a minute ago you started with, I don't know. And now you're at, no, I think I could align with the wisdom of knowing, right? Okay. Yeah. So that's already a step in the right direction, right? Okay. All right. Well, maybe if my body's creating this symptom, maybe I do know. Yeah. So now let's look at, if you do know that and you do know that this adaptation is here for you now, how does the adaptation currently serve you? Where in your life are you currently feeling separated? Where does that theme come up for you?
Oh, like this is something you would ask somebody?
Yeah, I would say, where does that theme come up for you? So I unpack that. That would be the basic foundation where we start from. And now we can put the practical solutions in place. Okay, where do I feel unified? Oh, I really like being in community with people. I don't feel separated when I'm in community with someone, yeah? But we start with, where did we already experience the physical separation? Oftentimes someone might say, oh, I just went through a really bad breakup with a partner and I think I'm not over it yet. And oftentimes I'll notice, where is the symptom presenting itself? You know, sometimes in that breakup, it's like, I start to get maybe like an eczema or maybe like a rash on my arms where I used to be held and embraced. Maybe it's on the back of my thighs where my partner used to sleep in my bed with me, right? So it's like you have to deal with the case by case basis. What is the symptom? Where is it? If I'm looking at the skin, it's almost always a localized program. What was the contact that was there that I felt separated from or that I wanted to separate from, you know? And then you also have to know we're looking at the different layers of the skin. So it's not only the epidermis layer, but then we have the subaqueous layer. So for example, like a rash would be different than like acne, so to say. So a rash would be on the epidermis of my skin. So it would be the separation conflict. But now when I'm looking at something like acne, it's that attack defilement program because it's that layer of pus that's rising to the surface. So it's not the epidermis anymore. So that's a different tissue adaptation. So now I look at, what is the adaptation there? So for example, the epidermis presents the symptom at the repair phase. I resolved it and then I'm re-triggered again sometimes. Maybe that's why it's chronic. The acne is presenting in conflict activity. Yeah, the cells proliferate when I'm still in the program. And what is the problem with acne? What do we do when we have the acne? We attack it even more. We're like, oh.
What if you think that's fun?
Yeah.
Does it still have the same impact?
If you think it's fun to...
Yeah, like, you know, let's be honest, ladies. Yeah. Like, I've never met a girl or a friend of mine that doesn't, like, see a pimple on their boyfriend and go, oh, let me get it. You know, like,
that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah.
But you might still, it's also attack, defilement, disfigurement. So you might run that. You might get the pimple and go, oh my God, I hate this. And you start to attack yourself. I hate this pimple. I feel so ugly. I feel so defiled. Because the biological function of acne, of that tissue layer, is to better protect myself. I'm actually creating like a thicker skin. And also when we go through puberty, it's very common. Sometimes we're attacked by our teachers, by our coaches, by our peers, and we're constantly feeling disfigured. Oh, I'm not pretty enough. I'm not good looking enough. I don't look like the other girls on Instagram. Yeah. So we run this. Like, think of how many symptoms you ran as a child that you don't have anymore. And the reason why you don't have it anymore is because you have more psyche awareness as you grow up. You have more emotional vocabulary. I can think of so many things I had that were chronic as a child. You know, I ran a lot of chronic eye programs. It started as a teen and then it went into my early 20s. And it was quite an intense program, so much so that many doctors told me, you will never be able to cure this without allopathic medicine. And if you try, you will go blind. Even with the upbringing I had, that was very scary for me because biologically it was true. I had a corneal ulcer. It was the outside of my cornea. It was ripping open. It was a visual separation conflict. So again, like we're talking about a separation conflict. And it was extremely painful because your cornea is the first area of protection and the eye is a very complicated organ, all right? So that was a very scary program. And even me, who's very holistic, I was in university at the time, so I had to have a doctor's note in order to be able to be exempt from class. So all of a sudden, me and my holistic upbringing, I had to go to the doctor. And you can think I'm already very triggering at the doctor. That's a very stressful environment for me because I didn't grow up that way. Now I get a very shocking and scary diagnosis, all right? But for me, the visual separation program, it was really intense. It was on my left eye. I'm right-handed. So it was on my mother-child side. And I moved to New York at 17 years old into a completely new environment. I was a dancer at the time. And I felt really separated from my mom. And we were always really close. We still are. So that was a really big, intense program. So what's the function? It's like my eye almost creates this ditch for me of this separation that I can't see her. And it's actually helping me, but that's a major program. It's quite intense. I need to do the work, okay? So that took a long time of me doing the work. And I also interrupted the program many times through antibiotics, etc. So now I'm interrupting the healing process, as many people do. So we go the allopathic route. We want that quick fix. So we interrupt the program and then the brain knows it's like, uh-oh, no, we didn't finish, sending the bacteria all the way back there again. Yeah. So that took me about a year of real work to do. And then, you know, the pandemic happened. I experienced a lot more visual separation. And after so many years of resolving it, the theme came back in my life. So I had to deal with it again. And again, I got that diagnosis, you'll go blind, you'll do this, you'll do that if you don't go the route. And I said, no, I'm determined. And I'd say it was about 8 or 9 months of real deep intuitive work. All right. And I did that. And it was a really intense emotional conflict for me that I was experiencing. And I did everything in my power to take my power back. I understood, okay, I'm visually separated from a lot of my loved ones right now, and I can't control that, all right? That's their choices, and I have to accept it, and I have to do everything in my power to resolve this for myself emotionally. And I worked on it every day with things that were in resonance for me. So I used mindfulness practices. I sang about it. I om chanted about it. But I trusted my body and I said, I know this is intense for me and I know it's going to take the work, but I'm going to keep unpacking it every day. And the eye is a really intense, complex organ, all right? And it has very complex tissue. And because I ran the program for a long time, I had tissue breakdown and I had scar tissue. So I knew biologically it's going to take some work to heal this and it's going to take some time, but I didn't allow myself to be afraid of that. So that's the other thing when something is chronic is sometimes people are afraid of that. Oh, it's going to take time and it's not a quick fix. No, it's not, because you were super intensely enmeshed in this conflict for a really long time. So now you need to do the reverse work and you need to enmesh and throw yourself into your own healing. And you'd be surprised, but even in the conscious community, a lot of people are not willing to do that. But I was willing to do that and I completely resolved and healed it and moved through it. I remember I just looked in my eye this morning and I don't have any scar tissue there. I had a scar there for many months and I don't have it anymore. And I had multiple doctors tell me, you will never be able to cure it without us. And I'm fine. And I never went blind. And they told me, you will go blind. You will go blind. And I didn't allow that to cause me any fear. You know, I worked through it and it didn't happen. So the proof is in the pudding. I also feel like you might say, well, you knew Germany medicine. So how did you have that? How did you run that? It's just the understanding that we are not superhuman, but to be human is super. So we are not always super intelligent. We're human. We make mistakes. We get triggered. SHIT happens to us in our life and we go through trauma. We're not immune from that. All right. We're not always super intelligent, but your body is super intelligent. So your body creates this super intelligent program for you. And now you need to do the work to overcome it. And it's not always easy. And that's the other mistake that people make. They think, oh, it's easy. Now I'll just do this. And yes, it can be. It totally can be for some. And for others, they're dealing with something in their life that is extremely traumatic. And then they need to do the work to overcome it.
How do you think, okay, like for example, your eye?
Mm-hmm.
Well, two-part question really quick, because I don't know all the parts of the body and where the symptoms are in conflict versus healing. Were your eye symptoms in conflict or healing?
They were on a track. So they were gotcha. Both. So I was going in and out.
So in this situation, it's simply maybe you were having some emotions around the separation without maybe at first being aware of it consciously. And then the eye symptoms is what was the wisdom to say, hey, there's something internally that's actually impacting us and we need to address this right now.
Absolutely. So that's very true. So yes. So when the first symptom appeared, that's when I knew, oh, what's the message here, right? Oh, I know that the cornea is a visual separation. So what am I feeling visually separated from? Oh, I know that it's in my left eye and I'm right-handed. So I know that it's my mother-child side. So now I start to look at where am I feeling visually separated from my mom? Oh, yeah. Well, I've lived with her my whole entire life. And now I've just moved to a new country where I know nobody in a highly stressful environment like the entertainment industry. And I'm having to make it in New York City on my own. Yeah. Okay. That's quite intense. Yeah. So now what can I do? I remember my mom, she knew the work. So she flew to New York, right? So she came to me so that visual separation, we could have a practical solution there. Yeah. And now I had to do that work to understand my triggers. I also interrupted it a few times using antibiotic eye drops. So the antibiotics interrupted the healing phase, but I was aware of what I was doing. So I was using it consciously because I also had to work. So I felt like I was living in a completely unbiological environment that I did now, right? I'm a rebellious teenager. I had to go out there and live my life. Even the way I was raised, I had to touch the stove to know it was hot. So even though I was raised that way, I still wanted to go out and live in the city and do all these things. I'm very different now. Those things are not at all important to me anymore, but they were then. Yeah. And they were as a young teenage girl who lived in a mainstream society where that was absolutely celebrated. So I went the allopathic route and that also interrupted the process. So it elongated the healing phase. Yeah. But that doesn't mean you can't work with somebody who is doing the allopathic route. And that doesn't mean that if you know this work, you don't do other things to support your healing. You do. There, of course, are supplements that can help facilitate. For example, like even I was taking fish oil at the time. Even allopathic doctors recommended fish oil. That is helpful. It does help to restore the tissue and the oil in our eye glands. So, of course, things are helpful. I am not giving medical advice. We don't give medical advice. We just educate on this paradigm of knowledge, and you do with that information what works for you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's interesting too, because I was going to say when I first learned about GNM, I think there can be a lot of things that can be traumatizing, right? Depending on how it's perceived. But I was kind of taught all medicine will interrupt the healing phase and you don't want to take it. So then I started developing this belief system that like all medicine is bad and I can't take anything. And I would put that pressure on myself, which essentially could create other conflicts. And so I sometimes get migraines. And there was a while where I was trying to like never, ever, ever take a migraine medicine. But then I had to do the work to get really clear that I was going to make conscious choices sometimes to take the migraine medicine. And I understood I was doing a quick fix. I understood that I could be blocking a healing phase. But like you said, you had to work. And so do I sometimes. So if I have a migraine and I'm going to need to go to my job today, which keeps a roof over my head, then I might make a decision to take that pill and feel better for the time being, while still addressing everything else, still being curious about what might have triggered it today. And that was a process, because there was a period of time where I harbored so much guilt and shame and fear and worry around taking the medicine to my detriment. And I finally got into a place where I've accepted like, hey, listen, this is the choice I'm going to make most of my time. And I have to be very realistic. And if I need to go to work today, I'm not going to suffer all day long if I have something at my disposal that will help me.
Mm-hmm. Very true. And I will say knowledge is power. And I was very young at the time. And those were the things that were important to me based off where I was at. I was living very much in the mainstream system. So I was living very anti-biologically. The more I informed myself, it was also an age thing. As I got older and I worked in the entertainment industry and I did it all, I realized, oh, it's not actually all that's cut out to be. And maybe my mom was onto something. Yeah, right? And so that accumulation of knowledge, I went back into myself. And really, the pandemic was really helpful for that because I couldn't work anymore. I was seeing where the system was going wrong, where things were happening in the outside world that I didn't actually agree with in the truth of who I am. So that's when I was finally able to get to the point where I don't need that. I'm not at the point where I would ever go to a doctor anymore unless I really needed it. That's where I'm at today. I don't take pharmaceuticals. And if I knew what I knew now, I wouldn't have taken it then. But you work with someone where they're at. And you offer knowledge and a new paradigm and a new way of looking at things that could empower them if they're in alignment with that. And that is our process, right? I like to say, I'm just trying to make the revolution irresistible. I'm just trying to show a different path one can take. But it's not for me to shame anybody that is going down a path, all right? That's not helpful. And I think sometimes in our conscious community, yes, it's important for us to radically live our lives and our truth. But it's not for me to judge others in the way that they live their life. And everybody has an opportunity to heal with wherever they're at. I'm not in your psyche. I'm not in your body. I'm not pretending to know what it is you're going through. You are the only healer. If I'm working with someone or I'm teaching someone or we're in our study group together, we're trying to figure out what is best for you in your psyche, how we can unravel and dismantle that for you. So that's an individual process, you know? This is just a body of knowledge that has empowered many people. And it was a doctor who had the inspiration that said, I don't think this is coincidence anymore. And many psychologists, I mean, we see it all over. There's the body keeps the score. Louise Hay, you can heal your life. I mean, there's so much work out there that supports this. And I think this wisdom is so cool because it's somebody who did thousands of brain scans to understand this relay and that conflict and this nuance and that germ layer. And that information is available for you. And you do with that information what you will. That's not my job, you know?
Yeah, that's good. You're really teaching it from like a more empowered perspective, not like more fear, right? Because people, especially in the chronic community, they've already had enough fear. So we don't want to find something out like this and then have fear that like I have to come up with my earliest childhood memory of a conflict when I was in vitro still. And if I don't remember it, I'm not going to be able to heal. Like we don't want that new fear.
Also, it's about your sovereignty. If you're just constantly going to a GNM practitioner or whoever practitioner you're going to, if you're just, you know, I always say if you're replacing your doctor with the shaman, it's not sovereignty because again, it's the externalness, you know, I work with people one-to-one as well in many different areas. I also do spiritual conscious work. I actually didn't think I would ever get into the GNM arena. That was sort of my mom's department. I just always liked to support her in the work that she was doing. So I didn't think I would be in the arena at all. I was working more spiritually, consciously. I have a conscious jewelry brand and a intuitive practice in Vancouver. And so that was the realm I was focusing on. And I didn't think it was important to get into the GNM arena until I just started to share my story. And sharing my story resonated with others. And I thought, no, I think this is really a time where it's all in alignment, where even with my conscious work, this is absolutely conscious. This is absolutely spiritual. The body is so spiritual. And if I can help somebody and that's the guidance that they're looking for, why wouldn't we unpack that emotional work? And I'm not a medical practitioner. So people still work with medical practitioners. That's great for them. I'm not judging that. I think we can all aspire one day to not need that and to live in a more harmonious and natural society and to dismantle that. And I would challenge many systems that are currently in place. And I would also vocally challenge them. And I do, yeah, because that's my right as a citizen of this earth to challenge systems that are unjust and unfair and not working in alignment with our full health. But ultimately, it's about achieving sovereignty. So most people just really benefit from learning this work. And that's where my mom and I sought out to create communities that teach various different study programs. And we have practitioners and mothers and healthcare workers that study this work to add this foundation into whatever it is that they are currently offering in their practice. And they're very successful in doing so. But what we've noticed the most, which is the most profound shift, is that people are empowered to change their lifestyle and live in alignment with who they truly are. And that's the most important thing that we can do, because there's a point, and maybe you've crossed this threshold, where you just know what you know and there's no going back anymore. And I know that point happened for me. And it just said, nope, I've had enough of living this way. Because living that way was living in a persona and a mask that wasn't the truth of who I am. And I'm courageous enough to live in alignment with what my soul and what my truth is calling me forth to do.
I love that so much. I could talk to you for hours, but I do have to be mindful of the time for both you and everyone listening. So I think that's like a really great place to kind of transition really quick. You've talked about like study groups and different offerings. So where can people connect with other people to learn more about this and their biology in community, which can often be easier, right, than on your own? And this information can be really complex and heavy. It's a lot. So having support is often very helpful.
Absolutely. All my offerings are on my website, wonderland.com, but that's Wonderland, H-E-I-R. I'm sure you can put it in the show notes if you like, because I just truly thought, okay, I was doing this conscious work and I was helping my mom and our study groups in offering just this education, and people do with that knowledge whatever they choose to. And I created this sort of community, Wonderland, because I always thought, what's the first thing that happens? We start to wonder. And when we wonder about something, it leads us to the avenues where the answers start to come. But it begins with that first thought of wonder. And then I love the word heir, because we are the heirs to this planet. We are the heirs of this ancestors, right? Like I said to you, your body holds the key to the wisdom of our ancestors and the guidance and the knowledge that we need now. So I named a sort of umbrella company Wonderland. We also host live in-person events. So we've had different speakers come, different practitioners come. I've worked with Dr. Melissa Sell. I've worked with Gilbert Renaud in Recall Healing. I've worked with holographic sound, just everything that resonated with me that felt it was empowering to be able to offer avenues and tools. But it starts with learning this body of work. And if this body of work resonates with you and you've listened to this and you're thinking, I want to take it a little bit deeper, we have study group programs that we offer that are online and in person in Vancouver, Canada. So if you happen to be local, you can attend in person. If you're non-local, you can attend online. And I believe we do so many things from women's health, from dismantling the entire female organ anatomy. If you are wanting to work through something that you're not quite understanding, you can do that as well. And we're just passionate about creating a community where this knowledge can come forth and where you can use the knowledge however it works for you. So it is a judgment-free zone. Everyone is welcome, and you can empower yourself to learn and study it and use it in your daily life or maybe in your practice. Yeah.
I love it.
And I'm always full of resources. So you can always reach out and say, oh, who's doing this there? And we stay really connected in this community. So I know various practitioners. I work with various practitioners. And it's all just about offering a new paradigm. And if that new paradigm resonates with you, amazing, you know? And if it doesn't, I don't bother convincing anyone.
Yeah.
That's good. That's my job.
Yeah. I love it so much. I'm going to ask you one final question because I ask everybody, okay?
Okay.
If you spent the rest of your life and you could only share one message, what message would you spend your life sharing?
Very good question. I think I would just really get back to sharing that everything starts from within. This is our sacred temple. And we follow the laws of the universe. We are just the universe experiencing itself in human form. And it all lies within this temple. We're creating our own realities, and the messages and the knowledge that we search for is always within us. So like your podcast said, our power is within. I totally could not agree more. And I think we need to get to the point right now in society today where we start to make the revolution irresistible. So what does that mean? We need to start absolutely living our truth unapologetically so that we can start to show and demonstrate that when we live in alignment with what our souls are calling us forth here to do, it creates the ripple effect. And like I said, we don't need to change anyone's mind. We don't need to, you know, hammer it in or point the fingers. We just need to create the resonance of our own true voice and our own true sound. And that will create the impact that it needs already.
Thank you so much. Thanks for being here with me today and sharing all your wisdom. And oh my gosh, this was so much fun. So I really appreciate you.
Thank you for having me. And I'm so excited for everyone that chooses to learn this work.
Yes, me too.
All right, friends, thank you so much for tuning in with me today. I hope that you enjoyed this deeper dive into G&M with Natasha. She is such a valuable source of insights when it comes to understanding our biology from a biological perspective. If you continue to find value in the content in this podcast, please consider supporting future episodes with a donation today. There is a link in the show notes called Support This Podcast. And if you haven't already done so, give us a follow on Instagram and join me on my weekly challenges. Our theme for October has been all about letting go. So until next time, make this week so great.
It's open wide, the fruitful darkness.